Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:17 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is December 13th. And I thought today I would kick off with looking at the Nasdaq, which had bounced over the last three sessions, but was pretty quiet in here today, only up about 4 points. But I think the more important point here is that it has the potential that we've seen a higher reaction low. That was posted four sessions ago, but is it going to hold it? The follow-through we've had on the upside has not been nearly as emphatic as we've seen from previous lows, even within the context of the fact that it's been trending down since October. And of course, all of this is happening within the context of a significant loss of momentum this year. Now, when we look at, for example, the valuations on the index, and just simply looking at the description page, we can see that the forward PE is down to about 21. Well, when we look at the chart of what the PE looks like, then maybe we just take out what we've seen in 2000. We can see that there has been some contraction in terms of valuations, but we're certainly nowhere near where they were, for example, back in 2011. What is particularly interesting is that there is continued evidence of chopping and changing going on within the market. And if we look at the net advancers, Apple was a bit stronger in here today, but then it is the kinds of companies that tend to pay dividends, such as Pepsi or Intel, that have been starting to perform here. And then you have Tesla. Well, Tesla was the most shorted stock in America, and it would appear that that short position is being unwound. The share has been really quite steady, and it is coming up towards the upper side of what is effectively an 18-month range, and it certainly has some relative strength behind it here. If we start to see Tesla at new all-time highs, well, that is going to very clearly paint the advantage that, or I guess what one might say is the first mover advantage that Tesla has in terms of developing electric vehicles, whereas the entire global automotive sector has got a lot of catching up to do and is going to have to spend tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars in order to get their capacity up to spec. Well, when we look at what's going on in terms of the S&P 500, we've also had valuations contract. The market was in slightly negative territory in here today, and the bounce that we've had here has also been pretty modest. This is, I think, one of the more important points here, that the bounce we've had has been modest on this occasion, but it was pretty impressive at bounces that we had in October and in November, or indeed back in February, in April, or in May. So there is certainly some argument going on about what the direction of the market should be. And the fact that the banking sector is unequivocally not bouncing, in fact, it moved to another new low in here today, is one of the reasons that we're starting to see the sapping of interest here. Well, what is also worth, I think, highlighting is that when we look at the Fed's balance sheet, they've been reducing the size of the balance sheet all year, and the pace of that decline is picking up. But it's also worth highlighting that at the end of 2014, in the beginning of 2015, was when they ended their quantitative easing program, and that's exactly the same time when the ECB started its big purchasing program. 2.6 trillion euro is a substantial sum to inject into both the, well, I guess let's just call it the global liquidity situation. Now, with the ECB ending its quantitative easing program and the Federal Reserve reducing the size of its balance sheet, well, investors should, I think, quite rightly be asking, where is the fuel going to come from for the next leg of this bull market if it is going to persist? So that is the big question. Well, there is a clear answer that's evolving, although it is certainly one that is open to a great deal of debate, and it is that we're getting a global shift from synchronized monetary expansion to synchronized fiscal expansion. And if we think about the countries that are adopting fiscal expansion right now, well, the USA in this case has been leading. Then you had the UK adopt a fiscally accommodative budget just in the last few months. Italy is trying to get its budget past the European Commission. Macron in France has just announced budget-busting measures that are going to take the deficit out to over 3%. That's obviously exposing some of the friction that you have within the EU, where there are rules for big countries versus small countries and versus the periphery versus the core. But nonetheless, fiscal expansion is starting to become more fashionable. India, with the appointment of a new central bank governor and the clear intention by the Modi administration to buy the election, well, that's starting to reflect in the potential that we're going to have growth as a result of that. That could help to arrest the decline of the rupee if the growth outpaces the surge in the amount of money that's going to be spent. But that is potentially going to be rather beneficial for the Indian market, and the Nifty index was in positive territory for a third day in here today, and it is bouncing from this 10,000 level. Well, that's, I think, one of the potential trades that we have here, that countries that are adopting fiscal stimulus, the more of them that do that, that's probably going to start putting pressure on their respective bond markets. That's likely to happen eventually, but perhaps not immediately. When, for example, we look at the 10-year treasury yield, it's right in the region of the trend mean, and it was stronger again in here today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. So there doesn't seem to be a great deal of a hurry for people to unwind their long positions in US Treasuries. When we look at the gilt yield, well, we've had some compression, not least because of the continued commentary on Brexit, but here also we've seen some unwinding of that long position, and that was a dynamic move that we had in here yesterday. When we look at the French 10-year yield, well, it's been very range-bound over the course of the last 18 months, really 2 years, but it is at the lower side of that range. Well, if they are going to impose budget deficits of over 3%, then that is likely to put upward pressure on the bond, excuse me, on the bond yield. If we look at German yields, they've been rock steady, around the quarter of 1% level. But this is the lower side of the range, and there is plenty of potential for additional upside. Well, there is, of course, what I find particularly interesting is when you look at the actual growth figures, then they haven't been particularly impressive. Europe has, but yet European ministers and economists are saying that growth is likely to pick up. But the reality is that the European economy has got significant challenges. It's largely dependent on the supply of quantitative easing. I think that people are grossly overestimating the potential for the economy to grow when China is slowing down and with the loss of liquidity from the ECB. But that's probably going to take a while to shake out. Meanwhile, JGB yields are back around the 5 basis point level. Well, you can remember that they had been imposing the policy that they were going to try and contain yields around the 10 basis point level. That blew out a bit in the latter half of the year, but now the yield is right back on the lows. This is looking rather rich in here, considering that if we're thinking about any central bank that is still committed to quantitative easing, it's Japan. But When we look at the stock markets for Europe, then I think we get a better idea of what investors really think. Because again, here, what we've had is a relatively modest advance. That we had a pretty impressive day yesterday. We're now right in the region of the lower side of that overhead trading range. This is the first area of potential resistance, and the index was not able to push up into that overhead range in here today. Then the banking sector wasn't able to hold its advance in here today either. So Europe needs fiscal stimulus if it's not going to have quantitative easing. And considering that you have had whatever it is, 28 different countries that need to agree on what fiscal deficits are likely to be, it's equivalent to herding cats. And this is going to take time to really change the diktat that's already been agreed among countries. So what is probably going to I think the most likely scenario is that an increasing number of countries are simply going to announce budgets that will break the rules, that they will get a lot of finger wagging from the European Commission, but then there will not be a great deal of sanctions that are imposed upon them. And that's particularly the case when you have the banking sector that has fallen from 140 to 90 this year and really does not really give us any sign that this downtrend is over. Well, the underperformance of global banks is something that we do need to pay attention to because the global liquidity situation is contracting. And when we look at the central bank balance sheets, it's been trending lower since the end of March. In fact, because the dollar has been somewhat steadier, or excuse me, somewhat weaker against the renminbi, then that is helping the balance sheet of the central banks to at least stop going down, but it's not going up either. This does represent a significant challenge. That when we think about it, that back in March, central bank balance sheets were at 20.8 trillion, and today they are at 19.49. So 1.3 trillion has been wiped off the value of central bank balance sheets over the course of approximately 8.5 months. So that is part of the reason why we've had this uptick in volatility and the what I described last year, and I think I'm going to I think resurrect the term, is that markets are experiencing indigestion, and that is definitely what we are seeing right now, that a significant number of stock markets, particularly those that have been most inflated by an addiction to liquidity, are under pressure. Then when we look at high yield spreads, and it does help if you type in the ticker correctly, then what we're continuing to see is that this is a breakout, and generally speaking, the high yield spread has to be rallying for a while in order to really have a deleterious effect on asset prices, but it is trending higher, and that does raise the possibility that it is going to become something of an issue, and it would need to sustain a move back below the trend mean to question that hypothesis. Now, when we look at what's going on in terms of the emerging markets, then I think most appropriate to look at their respective currencies. So, for example, the South African rand has held a progression of higher reaction lows against the dollar, so that is as shown inversely here, but it needs to hold them if the benefit of the doubt is going to be given to the rand's appreciation. When we look at, for example, the Brazilian real, well, that's the dollar trending higher against it over the course of the last 6 or 7 weeks, but that's following what had been a pretty impressive reversion back towards the mean by the real. So, as long as that four area holds, then I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to support building for Brazil. And The Bovespa is one of the few emerging markets that has squeaked out a positive return this year, whether one is looking at nominal or currency adjusted returns. And the index was up in today approximately 1% and has held this sequence of higher reaction lows. Well, that also helps to ram home the point that the market generally does tend to look favorably upon right-wing populist leaders. Whereas when we look at what is going on in Mexico, well, then we're presented with an example of what the market thinks of left-wing populists. Well, the Mexican market is really quite oversold in the short term, but it has got a lot of work to do in order to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So there is certainly an argument here that what we're seeing is demand starting to increase for what might be considered the more defensive kinds of companies. Starbucks, for example, has now broken up and out of what was a more than 3-year range. It had the very clear failed downside break and then broke out on the upside, and now it's firming once more. The I think return to performance of the kinds of companies that have got strong global franchises and strong cash flows is something that is defensive in nature, but also helps to highlight the fact that companies have got some of the best hedging characteristics against rising rates, because they have the ability to raise prices and then also to raise their dividends. So that's certainly something that we are seeing in here today, when, for example, Kimberly-Clark was one of the better performers and is now firming from the region of the trend mean and coming back up towards that psychological $120 area. So then if we look at utilities, we get a pretty similar story, that this index has bounced pretty impressively, and it continues to hold the region of the trend mean. And the consumer staples sector, which is really loaded with those dividend aristocrat type companies, is also firming from the region of the trend mean. Well, when we contrast that with the performance of the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index, well, then we can see that where the rotation has occurred, that this was among the best performing sectors for much of the last 3 years, and then lost a lot of momentum this year and has been struggling to hold its lows. It really does look like a first step below the peak, and that would suggest that the next meaningful move, or that the surprises, are likely to be on the downside. Now, when we look over at the commodity sector, oil prices today were in positive territory. So, what that definitely is beginning to suggest is that the cuts to supply are starting to have an effect on traders. But the more important point is that the consistency of the trend down from the peak in October, where we had an incredibly persistent and consistent decline, has now ended, and that the most likely scenario now is we're going to get a reversion back up towards the mean. Gold prices were relatively unchanged in here today, down about $2. But silver, having got right up to the upper side of its range, has paused and was able to unwind some of its decline in here today. Now the big question is it going to be able to sustain a move back above that $15 area? That would represent a breakout from this almost 4-month base formation. So that is potentially something to keep an eye on. Platinum prices, having rallied yesterday, held most of the advance in here today, but it really does need to follow through on the upside. Yesterday's advance was the first clear sign that we're starting to get a return to demand dominance. Palladium continues to outperform in the precious metal sector, and copper was unable to hold its advance in here today. Nickel prices have been accelerating down over the course of the last while, and they have started to lose momentum somewhat. But it really needs to break back above $11 to really confirm are to break the sequence of lower rally highs and to signal more than short-term support. And nickel has been the real surprise this year, considering that it was the best performing industrial resource until approximately June, and it has now turned into the worst performer. The other particularly good performer within the metals sector has been uranium, and the price has broken out of this 18-month range, and it is now testing the $30 area. Well, it's pausing to unwind the short-term overbought condition relative to the trend mean. The fact that uranium has now broken out is reflective of the fact that big companies like Cameco or Kazatomprom, which are the largest producers in the world, well, they have been buying on the spot market because it was simply cheaper to buy spot than it was to mine the stuff. So that really tells you how depressed the market has been and where the potential is for upside here, because these companies are restricting supply. Well, Cameco is coming right back up towards the upper side of this base formation, and it's holding the move above 15 Canadian dollars. When we look at Energy Fuels, which is a considerably smaller company in Canada, then if I just simply zoom in on the last while, it has first step above the base characteristics and is now testing the upper side of that range. So I think there is potential here for uranium assets to continue to outperform. And what that also helps to suggest is that there are certainly pockets of outperformance, that it is not the case that everything is going down, but rather that we are seeing that there is a lot more dispersion in terms of the kinds of assets that are going to perform, that there are significant challenges on the macro front that have not yet been overcome, that monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time, and monetary policy is contracting. So, or at least the supply of capital coming into the market and money flows is contracting. So, until we see a clear signal from central banks that they are willing to do something, or that the trend of continued fiscal stimulus accelerates further, then that's likely to act as a headwind for markets generally. Well, the longer markets range for without breaking on the upside, the more deleterious that is to sentiment. And if we continue to see volatility holding at a somewhat higher level, then that's likely to represent a challenge for investors. Well, we can also go back and look at previous bouts of volatility, that they can be followed by a couple of months of vol, and then it starts to come back down. But it is also worth highlighting that if we look at more back history and go back to a period, for example, below or before we had the advent of extraordinary monetary policy, that generally speaking, where volatility is right now is not all that different from where it was in the period 1998 through to 2000. That there have been occasions, obviously, in the intervening period when we've had much higher volatility, but that where levels are right now, somewhere around the 20 to 30 area, is not unusual. But that also coincided with a period before we had these bouts of massive accommodation, and the transition away from that is likely to have rather acute bouts of volatility. So this is still a medium-term corrective phase, and we can see certainly that the volatility has been moderating this week, but the rebounds that we've had have been modest. The yield curve spread was somewhat wider in here today. It's now at 15 basis points, but it is still trending downwards. And now the big question is really not if it's going to invert, but rather when. And the fact that stock markets have already priced in the potential for a recession, that we've had a lot of valuation contraction already. We've certainly had a rotation going on inside the stock market. The breadth of the market is starting to improve. That is a positive, but we're probably going to need some form of bullish catalyst from central banks or governments to really start to stoke investor appetite for risk again. In the meantime, the defensive sectors are the clear outperformers in this market. When we think about the gold market, well, then it is likely predicated on just how much further the dollar is going to rally. And the dollar remains really quite firm, and certainly the pace of its advance has moderated over the last few months. But it's going to have to at least break the sequence of higher reaction lows, and most particularly sustain a move back below the trend mean, to really confirm that the dollar's period of outperformance is in fact over. If one had to make the clearest argument for where it is over, it's probably versus emerging market currencies. So therefore, when we think about the fact that it isn't simply that India is doing better, but that a significant number of other markets are also starting to look a little steadier in here, then that is perhaps where the biggest opportunities reside, that it's probably in the emerging markets where you have the outperformance of India and Brazil and Indonesia that are really starting to take off here. Now, of course, one of the epicenters of risk is China, and it's difficult to avoid China if you're buying emerging markets. But at least the H-share index has stopped going down, and I think what someone referred to as my favorite share, which is Tencent, has at least broken its downtrend for the year so far and is unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. So there is certainly the potential here that emerging markets can do better, and that people have been very bullish of the US, but the US is no longer performing, and that you are getting relative discounts in the emerging markets right now. Well, if the dollar stops rallying, then that's a very clear green light for emerging markets. It's also worth highlighting that gold has been trading like an emerging market for most of this year. So if the dollar does start to decline in a more meaningful way, then that will be bullish for the gold price. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.